This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamotu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Hello and welcome along to What Have You Done For Us Lately, the show by Manawatu District Council talking about matters of council in our wonderful district. I'm your host, Ben Caldwell. Now today my guest is Bessie Nichols from the Awahuri Forest Kitchener Park Trust and just a general personality of fielding. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Now, tell us a little bit about your history, Bessie, rather than the trust. So, like, okay, what's your connection to fielding? You've been here your whole life, have you?
No. The only time I've been living in Manawatu was for 6 years in my mid to late 20s when I did some nursing down here and also went through Massey University. Then I went to Auckland, very diverse through health, private enterprise, my own businesses and stuff. And for the last maybe 10, 15 years of my life, working life, I was involved with a lot of economic development projects and right through the Auckland region. When I decided to retire from my work, I thought, where did I want to go? And I thought, you know, I quite liked it down here. I'm only a short distance from the hills and the bush, and it's not far to the beach.
Yeah.
So you plonk yourself in the middle.
That is the perfect analogy. So literally, you're only sort of like, in fielding anyway, you're only sort of 30 minutes from the beach and about 45 minutes an hour from the ranges.
Good,
so
Yeah. What else could you want?
Absolutely. All good. And so you've been living in fielding now for how long?
I've been here for coming up for 4 years. I don't actually live in fielding. I live out in Awahuri
in the
country, which is even better. The neighbours are kind of distant, which is great.
Absolutely. You seem like a people person, though, but maybe not a neighbours person. I don't know.
No, it's quite nice.
All good. So how did you get involved in, not so much the park trust, because we'll come to that a bit later, but how did you get involved in sort of conservation and nature preservation and things like that?
In actual fact, it is by default. One of my major skills is in governance, business management, business development, investment assessment, all of those kinds of things. And it's a level of competency that I have. And to me, what I wanted to do was work for the community in some way. And I saw an advertisement. They were looking for trustees for this particular trust. I knew nothing about it.
Yep.
The skill base I have is completely transferable.
Mm.
So I became a trustee, and I've been through a huge learning curve on a area that I knew very little about, you know, like other than what you read and that kind of stuff. Yeah. And so the learning curve is huge. But because of the work I've done in the past, there's lots of experts and knowledge out there, and it's just a matter of really listening and sifting and driving what's needed through. Yeah.
No, absolutely. So so that's how you got involved in the trust, I suppose, is the answer to the advert. And so did you know what you're getting yourself into? Because you have become one of the park's most passionate advocates.
I believe that if you take on a trustee role and you are making a commitment, it is a community thing. Mm-hmm. And yes, I will be passionate about it. And if it was a, and I thoroughly, I've got to be honest, I enjoy the whole process around it and get a lot of satisfaction from seeing things come together,
yeah,
which then are reflected in the improvements and activities around the park. But it's the first bits that's really where my game is.
Yeah.
No, but yes, I am advocate for the park, and I always will be while I sit in that role.
Yeah. So, like, what is it about the park itself that makes it such a special place to you?
Okay, one of the things, I didn't know anything about it when I came back down to this region after 37 years away. And once I started looking at the ecology around it, what this region was, that it really was a lot of wetland forest, primarily impenetrable. It was pretty tough sort of land, and we only had this small scrap left.
Yeah.
And within that small scrap, there's been even a loss of some of the plants and things like that, and we need to bring them back. But more importantly, the more I've got into it, is that our current living situations with the climate change, the constant flooding, the chopping and channeling of streams, which contribute to those kinds of, you know, events we've had in the last, particularly the last 12 months, are in fact our everyday living now. And we need to look at what is the impact on that forest, and to take it back, how do we restore something that is being impacted on by the environment, but also how does that forest's natural environment actually, how could it benefit our current dilemmas around our infrastructures?
Yeah.
And that's kind of where some of our projects are actually no longer around directly within the boundaries of the park. They're about the influences of the park, which is much more generalised geography, and in specific the waterways that feed into that park.
Yeah.
And that is the lifeblood of that park. And if that's not feeding in a manner that's conducive to the park's survival, or it's contaminated in any way, we, the community, are having a problem. So it becomes a symbol of the welfare of our hydro and geology and geography around us and our community as well.
Yeah. So I see you got a bit of paper there to help you with some notes. So tell us a little bit about some of the projects that are happening in the park at the moment.
One of there's a number of projects. There's a huge piece of land just north of the park that has been purchased and extended into the park as a national reserve. Now, the intention of that, for that piece of land, has always been about managing the hydrology better into the park, slowing the flow. This park is always flooded, but it's the high-velocity flooding that is occurring because of our streams being straightened, allowing shingle and stuff like this to be swept in across the park, and goodness knows what else. Now, as part of that, you have to then say, well, what are you fixing? What's the baseline now? So we're now starting to work on a project which is around the actual biological health of the stream and what is its impacts into that park, plus what's in our oxbows and things, so when the flooding occurs, which is normal, what is coming in, what is the residual that is being left in our in park waterways, how is that impacting on it? So as part of the wetland development, we're looking at the stream a lot more closely, and the impact in particular of Fielding Township on that stream and park. We see a lot of rubbish, we see a lot of exotic weeds swept down into the park during flooding events, but we don't know a lot about the real life of the stream.
Yep.
So we have We're just about, well, we've just started embarking on an eDNA assessment, which is really down the park, and it's a six site that we're looking at, sorry, down the stream, where we're looking at six sites and two sites within the park, what is in those waters. Mm-hmm. eDNA, for those that don't know it, is just really environmental DNA, DNA.
Yep.
And it actually says what can be assessed within that waterway, whether it be mammals, insects, fish, birds, lizards, plant algae, bacteria, phytoplankton, freshwater mussels, all of those kinds of things we can now, with eDNA testing, pick up, are they present or not?
Yeah.
So this is a baseline assessment, and it starts north of Fielding on the Makino Stream, just on the outside of all of the town and where the houses and that are.
Mm-hmm.
So we start by looking at what is flowing into Fielding. The next site is just beyond the Rata Street Bridge across the Makino at the end of the housing. We'll be looking at the next site, which is what is actually
coming out of Fielding. Yeah.
What's the add-on into here? Then we'll be looking at what the Mangoni Stream brings in at the confluence of the Makino.
Mm-hmm.
Then a bit further down, what's directly going into the park, and then we've got a couple of other sites further down past the park, what's sweeping through the park and out and back into the Makino, down, and what's happening within Fielding and all the rest of it.
Yep.
Right down to the confluence between the Makino Stream and the Orua River. The other two sites are within the park itself, and they're in our oxbows. There's two significant oxbow networks, one on the eastern side, one on the western side. And they both feed at different points,
mm-hmm.
in different ways, you know, with water. So we're assessing both of them. They display quite different behaviours and have different plant life around them. So we want to know more about what is their makeup mm-hmm. in there. This information that is not owned exclusively by the Trust, it's to be shared with all of the schools, high schools, through our education program.
Mm-hmm.
It will be made freely available to everybody. And in particular, we are working a little bit more closely with Kolfata Jobs for Nature, who are mm-hmm. the guardians of the stream.
Yep.
And so they have a strong vested interest in having the information as well.
Mm-hmm.
So part of the collection will be done in conjunction with some of the schools, and some of it will be done with Jobs for Nature.
Yep.
The actual results and outcomes will be distributed to those that we know have vested interests already, like the River Accords and Horizons mm-hmm. and those sorts of things. But they will also be made completely public on our website. They will also be on WilderLab, which is the eDNA assessment form. It'll be also available on their labs. So any person who has any form of interest, whether it be highly technical and research-based, right down to, do we have kora in the stream?
Mm.
Let's have a look. You know, like, it's as wide and totally available
yeah.
to everybody, so it will be completely open source.
And that's really cool, like, to have that information, because, like, I suppose we don't necessarily think about it, like, everyday people, about what comes in, what goes out, you know, and we kind of know that there's eels in the Makino, but you'd never wonder what else is in there as well.
Yeah. You know, are there natives still there? Have we managed to, have any populations survive?
Mm.
And if there are, how endangered are they?
Yeah.
What should we be doing right now? What is the weed issue, you know, that is in there?
Mm.
What are the risks for future weed explosion populations? You know, we see that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
We don't know that yet. And So it's not just the park's value to this. It is much wider, and that's, I guess, some of the things that Awahuri Forest Kitchen Park Trust is actually looking at, is that tells us a lot about our community and our geography and our, it's not just a park to restore. It's it's perhaps a weather vane to some degree.
Possibly, yeah, absolutely. It's important that we kind of think of nature as having that purpose for, you know, man-made development or land development and things like that. Yeah, absolutely. So so the eDNA, I was about to say eDMNA, but that's something completely different. so that's going to be happening very shortly, is it?
We've just completed the sampling in the oxbows inside the park, and we were supposed to on Wednesday be working with the local high school to do one of the sites with some of their students. Unfortunately, COVID got in the way.
It's
still lurking in our community, so we had to cancel that particular event. We hope that we will have that done next week, and then we're scheduling the others. So our hope is that within about 14-15 days we will have all of our samples together ready to be submitted to the lab for analysis.
So when you say you're working with the schools, is like, are there any particular classes that you're working with? Like, is it a science class, or is it just any kid that's interested?
No, apparently in the high school, one of the classes was working on understanding DNA as part of their science work.
Yeah.
And this is a practical live example of how you can get information about a form of DNA, this being aquatic, an aquatic environment based rather than other DNA. And that's why we've asked them to be included, that they can come out, share with us. There is quite a lot of talk within the school curriculums now about DNA and how its value streams around it are amazing information sources. So it's not uncommon now to see this kind of discussion in the schools at all levels.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is brilliant, that we have a science tool that is so readily available today. It wasn't a few years ago, that it is readily available, and that it's being incorporated into curriculums for thousands of different views and ways to look at it and use it.
Yeah.
No, that sounds fabulous.
Absolutely, definitely does. So, you mentioned the education program there before.
Yeah.
So, what is that involving? I know that my kids have actually been on some education programs at Awahuri Forest Kitchen Park, and they rave about it. So, what's involved?
It's quite a diverse program in some ways. We have created an education program that is primarily about exposure to issues around the park. So we bring school children in, and we go through educating them, showing them on a very practical level what is there. Things like looking at the bird life, looking at the animal insect life, what age some of those trees are. You know, that it's mind-boggling to a child that, you know, some of them are, you know, 500-700 years old.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a unusual concept, even for adults to get their heads around in some ways. So there's the park visits, but that's only the tip of the iceberg, because a lot of that information is fitting back more and more. We're tailoring into the curriculums of the schools. So we're trying to put together support programs for them, and they're taking the information away and linking it into their curriculum stuff as well. So our education program has created quite a strong link with the schools to kind of support that curriculum stuff. The other thing we're very closely linked to is the Horizons, and I'm trying to think of the name. They have a Enviro Schools program.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so we link very closely with the Enviro Schools program and Horizons, but because they are kind of limited in where they can go to, because the school has to become a registered Enviro School in itself, we have the opportunity to fill that gap and try and bring other schools up and give them the, you know, in there,
yeah.
to try and support the knowledge being dispersed wider. So we have quite a key role in doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from that, there's individualised programs around schools that ask us, you know, can they come in and do a specific thing and focus on these. So there's the generalised visits and things, but then there's the specialised one-offs for individual schools. And more recently, we're starting to branch out into some publications and information processes, which my hope is you'll interview the education contractors sort of, well, maybe in the first quarter of next year. There could be some very exciting news to come through. And I think that would, you know, so there is programs that are brewing and bubbling in there. And one of the things is that we do need to acknowledge the Manawatu District Council decided to take a risk and invest quite heavily in our education program this year. And so our work is subsidised to quite a significant degree around education from MDC.
Oh, that's...
I think that is great that the council's, you know, right there behind us. So I think that's nice.
Yeah. No, fantastic. Before we wrap on up, is there anything else you wanted to cover before we head off? And
it's a very dangerous question.
I know. I appreciate that it's open to interpretation there, but no.
No, I think that we should actually sort of... There's so many topics.
Yeah, well, we'll have to get you back on again, you know, definitely. And yes, I will be hitting up those education providers as well to come on and have a chat as well. So
thank you.
Thank you very much, Bessie. Really appreciate you coming along and having a chat.
Okay, thanks.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.